turkeys away! Culture Clash listeners. Sorry, I can't hide again.
Watch out for flying turkeys! Watch out! Watch out! They don't fly!
The deadly flying turkey of WKRP.
Have you watched that yet? Or you watched
that tomorrow? That is tomorrow. That is my
tradition. I guess we should clarify we're recording this the day before Thanksgiving.
Yes, absolutely. We were debating whether we were going to do one or not, but there's enough news to sneak a little bit of Culture Clash into your Thanksgiving. But you know what, Kevin? Got to ask. You know, are you doing any big things for Thanksgiving, or is it just going to be lie low, watch a little football, go for a bike ride?
A little bit of what you said there. I am not going to be, who rides their bike on, unless you're trying to not enjoy Thanksgiving, who wants to ride their bike or exercise?
I just know you like your bike rides.
Yeah, but not on Thanksgiving. Come on. We're starting to finally get some rain here, in Santa Barbara. It's going to be staying in. I enjoy the day off. I'm not going to try to hit any places that are open for Thanksgiving. I refuse to do that.
Good man.
I am spending Thanksgiving with my dad and my brother for the first time in a long time. So we're going to relax, watch some football, might watch a movie or two. Kind of eyeing maybe The Irishman, because apparently that's dropped on Netflix. Three and a half hours of that. In between some football and stuff. So yeah. And then there might be like a turkey coma, maybe around 6 o'clock after we eat around 4-ish. So we'll see. Because I got to get up early Friday morning for work.
Yes, so. I will be off on Friday, but I am going to be hanging Christmas decorations at my parents' house on Friday, giving them a little bit of hand with some of the outdoor decorations. So, but you know what? But before we do anything, we got to Culture Clash 150, Kevin. Are we really sure we're at 150?
150.
Did we really think we were going to go this long?
No.
Somebody was going to pull us off the air, or Morris or Autry were going to have a coup, one or the other.
I know, right?
But no, we're here, Culture Clash 150. Of course, you're home on the Fandom Podcast Network for fandom news, reviews, and whatever turkey-based stuff we can eat. So with that, before we do anything, the stuffing's on the table. Stuffing or mashed potatoes or both, Kevin?
I am not a stuffing fan, I'll be honest with you. To me, it's you got to make sure. If you want me to come over to your house, you're going to have mashed potatoes and mac and cheese.
Any sweet potatoes?
I'm not a big sweet potato fan.
You want the marshmallows?
I like marshmallows. I'll just take them on the side.
There's no hope for this guy. Without further ado, let's turkey this thing.
This is the Culture Clash.
Who invited the gobbledygooker over here? That's all I'm saying. Somewhere WWE fans, old school, are really getting that reference right now. But, of course, you're listening to Culture Clash on the Fandom Podcast Network, and you can find us at all kinds of places, but it all starts at our homepage at fpnet.podbean.com. Of course, you can also use the Podbean app and search for the Fandom Podcast Network. Of course, you can also find us on Apple Podcasts /iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play for you Android device users, and Spotify as well. Of course, you can visit our Facebook page, Fandom Podcast Network. You can email us directly at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can follow us on Instagram at Fandom Podcast Network, on Twitter at FanPod Network. You can follow myself, Kyle, at AKyleW on Twitter, and on Instagram at AKyleFandom. Kevin, where can people find you on social?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix.
And of course, too, you know, following Thanksgiving Thursday, you've got Black Friday, and that includes TeePublic. And you can visit our TeePublic store on Black Friday. I believe it's going to be 35% off on shirts for the weekend. Go to TeePublic.com, search for Fandom Podcast Network, and you can find all shirts of all the great gear of the Fandom Podcast Network. Of course, too, we love getting feedback, especially on Apple Podcasts or iTunes. Leave us that 5-star review. We love those, of course, but we love to get the feedback in general so we can make better podcasts to feed your ears. Now, Kevin, Have you been up to anything fun, exciting, or has it just been? Now, wait a minute. I know you had things got a little Evil Dead in your life over the weekend.
This is true. My lovely Erin, she had to go back to Australia for a while. But before that, we went back down to Los Angeles last Saturday to that really cool place in Burbank. Burbank's one of the main streets in Burbank called Magnolia Street is really cool. It's got a bunch of really cool stores on it. And we mentioned it that it feels kind of like the way Melrose Avenue or Melrose Street back in the day in the 80s and early 90s was before it kind of went to crap. But there was that cool store down there that's called the Bearded Lady Mystic Museum. And it's got this kind of all of this really cool, weird stuff and occulty stuff in it. And they've had this Evil Dead, what do you call it? Kind of like a museum attraction there, that a lot of stuff that's been put on loan there by Sam Raimi himself and a bunch of artists. And we went there for that last month, and it was a lot of fun. But they had this cast signing and group photo thing of the original cast from Evil Dead, minus Bruce Campbell, of course. But all of the three ladies and the one guy were there signing autographs. And we decided to get a VIP package, and that included one free autograph with all of them and also some cool swag, this really cool poster that commemorates the event, and then also we got pictures with them as well, and they were all really, really cool. And Erin being the big Evil Dead fan, this is one of the things that we did, and that has a long list of fun things that we have done that has been related to Evil Dead, including getting engaged in front of Bruce Campbell himself.
Yeah, at this point, Bruce Campbell needs to be at the wedding.
I know, right?
So, but you had that, but we got other things to talk about too, Kevin. Are you feeling extra gobbly this week?
I do. Gobble, 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 let's news!
Let's news!
Okay, the turkey did his job. Get the meat cleaver. Thank you. Okay, so we have a few interesting news tidbits this week, Kevin. One that kind of hit and impacts, I think, more than just the movie that is getting moved, because Warner Brothers has announced that they're moving the monster bout of the decade, Godzilla vs. Kong, to November 2020. Now, there's an interesting side to this, is that this is going to put it awfully close to the other big Warner Brothers release for the year, and that is Dune. I'm wondering if there's something going on with Dune where they might push Dune back a little bit.
When was Dune scheduled to
come out? Dune was scheduled to come out in early December.
Okay, so you got Kong coming out in November, probably middle to late. Probably on Thanksgiving, maybe, and then you got this. How are they related? Just same movie company.
I just don't know if they would want to have these two big film franchises that they've been trying to push open so close together.
Why was tell the listeners here, why was this pushback? What was the reasoning?
A combination of things. It looks like Warner Brothers wants to get more of the effects cleared up and some reshoots as well. And some of it they're saying is a little bit of the disappointment of Godzilla King of the Monsters, which made $385 million worldwide, but had a $200 million budget. So it made money, but it wasn't quite right there. So, but
you know what I'm thinking? And I touched on this several culture clashes ago. Mm-hmm. The new summer movie season's the Christmas movie season.
Yeah, I really think that is the case.
I mean, look at the trend. I mean, look at what's been happening. Some summer movies have been disappointing, and I think that with like Star Wars and the Harry Potters and the what do you call it? The I'm sorry. I'm trying to think of the other movies that, came out.
Well, you've had always had a big Disney movie.
The Hunger Games. The Hunger Games came out during the holiday. That's what I was trying to remember. They're going for the holiday buck. I wouldn't be surprised if that was the reason. And I think it's actually a smart move. I'd love to see, Godzilla, King Kong come out during that time.
Yeah. I'm excited for that film. I'm looking forward to it. I like that universe they've built. I really enjoyed Godzilla, King of the Monsters. So we'll see what happens. But other things are going on at Warner Brothers, too, because thanks to Joker's worldwide performance of over $1 billion.
Does that surprise you?
I am shocked by that. I'm legitimately shocked by that.
So am I, man. I mean, talk about a movie that really, I think, rode the wave of good reviews, good
word of mouth.
Word of mouth. That's the word I was looking for. Yeah, thank you. And just really kind of exploded.
Yeah, I agree. I did not see that coming for Joker at all, but because of it, it looks like DC's branch of Warner Brothers is looking to get the films pushed again. Obviously, we have Wonder Woman 1984 coming, as well as Birds of Prey and a new Suicide Squad movie, which both of those movies look to be rated R. We still have rumors of a Flash film. We still have talk of Aquaman 2, but it looks like they're also going to try to fast track now another Green Lantern film. Kevin, and plus we also have the Matt Reeves, Robert Pattinson Batman film. And there's been a lot of rumors because they just also signed J.J. Abrams, obviously, to a contract over at Warner Brothers, and with a lot of speculation that he might be being brought in to kind of resurrect the Superman franchise as well. I look at this, Kevin. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm kind of afraid by this. Warner has proven they can't really get the DC universe right.
Well, hopefully JJ will bring in some direction there. I mean, that's kind of what we were hoping he would do. I honestly do want to see them get the Green Lantern right. I do want to see that. I think that character is important and crucial to the DC universe because he's part of the team. You know, he should be. He should have been in Justice League. You know.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's just, I'm excited for Wonder
Woman. And the Wonder Twin powers. So the Wonder Twins, they should be there as well.
No, but, you know, I'm excited for Wonder Woman 1984. I know we're getting a trailer here shortly. I'm excited for Aquaman 2 if they get around to that. They get Jason Momoa's a busy guy and he's getting run over by tractors. So, and I'm curious. My intrigue is high for the Matt Reeves Batman film, but
I'm actually excited about that.
I'm just not sold on Warner Brothers and the directions they take, but we'll see.
Understood.
Speaking of Christmas movies and stuff coming out of Christmas, of course, we know one of the big Christmas releases this year is obviously Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker. Well, the final runtime has been revealed, and it is actually going to be a little bit shorter than what everybody was speculating, because the film, a lot of people were going to figure it was going to be the longest of the Star Wars films, and it's not. It's going to clock in at 2 hours and 21 minutes, which is only the second longest Star Wars film. It will be shorter than The Last Jedi, which remains the record holder at 2 hours and 28 minutes, Kevin.
Yeah, wasn't it speculating that Rise was going to be around 2 hours and 38 minutes?
235 was a name was a number I heard a lot. I don't know if this is a huge deal or not, but I just kind of find it interesting because everybody had speculated that this was easily going to be the longest Star Wars film.
Well, they I saw an interview with J.J. Abrams on one of the night shows. Oh God, what's the host? What's his name? I can't remember the talk show host anymore. Not Jimmy Fallon. Help me out here, Kyle. Not the guy who's a big Star Wars fan, the skinny guy that used to be on the Daily Show or
John
whatever.
Stewart or Stephen Colbert.
Yes, thank you, Stephen Colbert. big Star Wars fan. I remember he went on a tangent about defending the Kylo Ren lightsaber when we first saw glimpses of it for episode 7. But he was interviewing J.J. Abrams, and J.J. Abrams said a couple of cool things. First of all, he just finished finish the film, which included all of the editing and stuff like that, like literally a few days ago. So my guess is that they finally cut it down to a length that worked. But he also said something that was interesting was that in that Leia book by Carrie Fisher, that she kind of foretold what was going to happen was that in the book, she says that she worked with J.J. Abrams twice, where he said no at the time that was written, it was only once. But because she's going to be used in scenes of her are going to be used in episode 9, and this is the case. So that was kind of interesting that she kind of foresaw what was going to happen.
Yeah, it really was interesting. Of course, now if J.J. could just stop John Boyega from leaking scripts onto eBay.
What was the deal with that? Was that a joke?
No, apparently this is something that was legit. Somehow one of John Boyega's scripts got leaked onto eBay.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, I don't know. But speaking of scripts, it looks like the Rise of Skywalker script is going to have a little more Lucas influence than anybody initially thought. Because in an interview with Entertainment Weekly, Kathleen Kennedy, who's been talking quite a bit, I must say, talked about how her, J.J. Abrams, and another person, the last name of Terrio, sat down with George Lucas for a long meeting before we even put pen to paper for this final episode, so that we had the benefit of his thoughts, where they apparently took a lot of notes. And of course, we do know that George has had a little bit of influence on The Mandalorian as well. So George kind of coming back in to help maybe right the ship a little bit there, Kevin, because obviously The Mandalorian's been absolutely amazing and the fandom is in love with it, but could George have a little more influence on Rise than we realized?
I would love to see if that was filmed. I would love to have been in that room while that happened. Now, you use the phrase right the ship. I'm curious what defenders of the Last Jedi feel about this. I mean, they would say that no, they're not riding the ship. Curious, why would they bring him in the first place? Why bring in George Lucas? Why do you think, Kyle?
Because the ship needed to be righted. I'm sorry, and it's not a matter of whether or not you like Last Jedi or not. The facts were there. You had Bob Iger falling on the sword. We saw what happened to Solo in the theaters. Things were not right within the Star Wars universe. And so why not go back to George Lucas and say, okay, what can we do to get things kind of back on track?
How do you approach him? Because after Bob Iger said the things that he said in his book and how he felt he handled the situation with George Lucas, and he felt that he handled it wrong. And how do you go to Lucas, who now doesn't have anything to do with Star Wars? They didn't use his treatment. Do they say, look, here's what we have. What is your advice in the direction? I don't think they use words like, please help us fix this.
Yeah, no.
We are as fans because of how the fandom has been split over The Last Jedi and how Lucas and how Disney acquisition is kind of had their, how they have had their influence on Lucasfilm. But how do you approach him? Do you say, look, we would really love to get your input on where you would like to see this end. Here's what we have. What would be your recommendations? Do you think it was his idea to go with the Emperor?
I think it was. I think from what I've read, JJ's been involved with, and he's had an idea of the Emperor for a long time. What I think is this, is I think the creative minds over at Lucasfilm now really are the ones who reached out to George, and we're talking Favreau, we're talking J.J. Abrams, we're talking other people involved with The Mandalorian, and George still does have a good relationship with Kathleen Kennedy. Say what you will about Kathleen Kennedy. Kathleen Kennedy has been a part of Lucasfilm for a very long time, and she has that relationship with George. So, and I think
that's it. That's the important key right there, is the history. They've known each other for over 30 years, worked with each other for over 30 years. That's the important key. I'm sure she had to be the one that reached out, if not Dave Filoni, saying, "Hey, I have nothing to do with the movie, their boss, but can you talk to these guys?"
Well, and I mean, I think JJ, when they did Force Awakens, was considerate of George during the filming of that, and I think he appreciated it. And you know, George has had time away, and I think he's had time. A lot of the hard feelings that were there on all sides have kind of mended over time.
Is he going to get a credit in the film? That's what I'm curious about.
I would be surprised if he did, actually. I think, you know.
Not like, you know, one of those credits that says original characters created by George Lucas. You know, that's not what I want. Is he going to get like an executive producer credit or a consulting credit?
I have no idea.
Or,
I would,
you know, I mean, apparently Colin Trevorrow is getting some type of residuals from this. I don't know how that contract worked that out.
Colin Trevorrow got that Harrison Ford contract.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just interesting. You know, and like I said, I'm looking forward to this film. I'm looking forward to see what they do. But you know what I'm more looking forward to is the fact we're going forward with a clean slate after this film. And that's what I'm really looking forward to.
Are we? What do you mean by that?
I think as far as film-wise, I think we do have a clean slate. We're going to hopefully be free of anything of the Skywalker saga at this point going forward. And I think it's a little bit of a fairly clean slate with Star Wars to work on. So that's what I'm saying. And you know, you look and see what's going on with the Disney Plus shows, because obviously not only with The Mandalorian, but when we'll discuss this a little bit later when we get Mando watch, but there's a reason why this week's particular episode of The Mandalorian also gives you a positive outlook for another show coming to Disney Plus very soon. So
can I ask you a question? We didn't bring it up on I think we did, but I want to ask your opinion. This quote, and I don't know how accurate it is, but it was from that interview, I think it was Rolling Stones or whatever it was, with Kathleen Kennedy, where she says it was difficult. Star Wars is difficult because there's not enough source material to pull from. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah, but that I quote along those lines, and I'm like, no, there's plenty to pull from. You guys just decided you weren't going to pull from it.
Yeah. I was wondering what you thought of that, because I was like, my first, just so you guys know, for those that defend Kathleen Kennedy, and I do to a certain degree, I'm wondering if that was pulled out of context, because I find it very, very hard for Kathleen Kennedy, someone in her position, to say something like that, at least the way that article said that. I find it very hard to believe that she doesn't know about the thousands of comics and the hundreds of legends books that you could pull something from.
Yeah, no. I mean, there's, and that's the thing. So I don't know what was the behind that statement. And like I said, Kathleen has been strangely talkative lately, and that's usually not her.
True.
So I just wonder what's going on over there. And I'm not trying to read anything more into it. It's just Kathleen has been pretty quiet. Everybody at Lucasfilm outside of Jon Favreau and Iger have been pretty quiet. So I find it interesting all this is coming out now from Kathleen. But, you know, it's not just Star Wars that's going on, because, you know, Kevin, this has been kind of a year of transition for a lot of major studios as well. And what we obviously kind of have this big change coming in Star Wars with the end of the Skywalker saga. We had the end of this Infinity saga for the MCU. Well, it has been confirmed officially now. Daniel Craig himself has said it. No Time to Die will be his last Bond film for sure. A lot of people thought it was the previous one that came out, but Daniel Craig has confirmed this will be his last Bond film. It is time for somebody else to pick up the mantle. I'm okay with this, Kevin. I think it's time.
Me too. Completely agree. He's done a great run as Bond, a great bunch of films, and I'm excited for this. You know, it looks like we've also got a great cast as well. Ralph Fiennes is in it too, which is cool. And it's going to be released on April 8th, 2020, next year. Fine. Yeah, move on. Let's find someone else.
Yeah, I'm ready for somebody else to take over the shoes of Bond. And I kind of hope they maybe find an unknown. I would really like to see that. Let's bring in somebody new. Let's create a new star.
Yeah, I could see that. Although if they do pick someone that we do know, I hope it's the right person.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting. Now our last piece of news, which, you know, I know Kevin, you are way beyond the burned out point on The Walking Dead. but we do have a third series coming and it finally has a name, The Walking Dead World Beyond. I'm actually a little bit intrigued by this series because it's going to be from the perspective of children that now who have completely grown up in this Walking Dead world. And they don't know any different. It's going to be a little bit in the future. And I think that's kind of an interesting twist. Also, Julie Ormond has been announced as part of the cast for this as well. I'm curious to see where they're going to go with this. There has been a lot of rumors floating around on the net, and I haven't heard anything confirming these or not, but that they're looking to line up the actual original Walking Dead show to maybe come to an end finally after season 12, which would, when you think about it, would make a lot of sense. They've got the movies coming out that are going to focus on Rick's story. You've got Michonne leaving the show.
It's gone on 5 years too long.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm not going to argue that, but I think it's also a fact that the comic ended in 2019 as well, so... I think it's just time. So,
yeah, I did this concept of these kids. I'm not excited for it. To me, I'm just seeing to me, it feels like it's going to be a CW version of Teens in the Apocalypse. That just doesn't interest me.
Yeah.
I mean, the problem for me with The Walking Dead was that it was running around in circles and it wasn't telling you what was happening around the world. And it wasn't showing progress. It didn't make progress for me. And I don't see how this show's going to do that.
Yeah, I think for me, my thing with The Walking Dead is it always felt better when it was a road show, when they were traveling, trying to find shelter, trying just to survive. Whenever it stalled in one place, it was not anywhere near as good, but you know, it is what it is. But Kevin, we've seen a few things, including just today. So once again, it is time to buy it, stream it, or unsee it. And let's start with the movie we both went and saw today, Kevin, and that was 21 Bridges, the Russo's newest film, starring the Black Panther himself, Chadwick Boseman, but also including J.K. Simmons and Sienna Miller in this cast.
Was that Sienna Miller?
I believe that was Sienna Miller. Let me double check.
Yeah, you're right. Gosh, I totally didn't even recognize
her. Well, that's how much she nailed that accent, too.
Yeah. The director is Brian Kirk. Not directed by the Russo Brothers.
They were produced by them. So. Yeah. But this movie's been advertised for a while, and it's been moved around a little bit, which can always be a little scary. But a couple things about this movie, Kevin. One, it had a really short runtime. It was
like an hour and 35 minutes. Something like that.
I mean, a quarter of the movie was the previews and the advertisements. But you know what? I really liked this film. I thought it moved at a great pace. It had a great story to it. Some interesting people showing up that I wasn't expecting, a certain Dr. Bashir.
Yep.
I thought...
A certain Gambit.
Yep. I thought it had some... It had some great moments to it. And I'll tell you what, I am a big fan of Chadwick Boseman.
Yeah, it was nice to see him in a leading role other than Black Panther. And I've seen a couple of his other films as well. And he's very good. The screen likes him. And he plays basically the son of a cop, and he's become a successful detective himself. It's about a citywide manhunt for a pair of cop killers, that also uncover, some dirty cops and their motives as well. And, I thought it was a really cool story, especially having to try to shut down Manhattan to keep, cop killers contained.
Yeah, no, I think it was an interesting concept. Some really good action sequences. Chadwick Boseman is definitely one of the better leading men in Hollywood, up and coming. He was great in this, obviously Black Panther. He also did a Netflix movie, Name of the King, that he was absolutely outstanding in.
That was good, yes.
Bill Simmons on the Ringer podcast recently did a great interview with him too, and he comes across absolutely like this is a guy you want to hang out with. This is a guy you want to get to know. Mm-hmm. Obviously, also has played Jackie Robinson and James Brown, so he's played some pretty historical figures.
Yeah,
as well.
my only problem with this film, and it's a silly thing, but when you saw that Keith David was in it, and because he's in the flashback scene when you see Chadwick Boseman's character at the funeral of his father in the beginning of the film, I wanted to see more of Keith David because he's such a great actor.
Oh yeah, I know, we can never get enough of Keith David. Yeah. For me, 21 Bridges, this is a, I don't know if you want to, if you don't catch it in the theater, it's not an end of the world thing, but I'm going to call this a buy it, Kevin, because this is a great crime drama, very fast paced. There's no slowdown to it. It's nice and tight, which I haven't gotten from a movie in a while. I haven't gotten that like really tight, cohesive feeling from a movie in a while where you just sit down, you enjoy it, it's done, and you just walk out and go, wow, that was just a good movie.
Yeah, there's a point in the film where you're like, wow, they're at that. And I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, because I'm trying not to be spoiler here. But they get to a certain point, you're like, well, that caught up quick. Now what?
Yeah.
And then it takes that turn like, oh, okay, there's more to
this. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, but no, definitely I'm calling this a buy it. I thoroughly enjoyed this movie. What about you, Kevin?
I'm halfway between a buy it and a stream it. I think it's worth, you know what, support Chadwick, go see it on the big screen. I think it's worth it. Definitely, if not, definitely stream it.
Now, a movie, did I see correctly that you and the lovely Erin Gill, before she left for Australia, went to a preview of Knives Out?
Yes, it was releasing, it's releasing today and tomorrow for Thanksgiving officially, but they had a, Ryan Johnson's new film Knives Out had a week early preview in selected theaters around the country.
So, okay. We've talked about Ryan Johnson a lot on this podcast. I'm actually...
Really? Yeah. Why? What? Who's he? Has he done something else?
Here's the thing. I actually like Ryan Johnson's other movies, and I recently did a rewatch of The Last Jedi, and I will say that this about The Last Jedi. Cinematically... And with the cinematography, it is a beautiful film. There is some amazing.
I would agree with you. Camera work. It is a good looking film.
And I loved Looper. I'm a big fan of Looper. I've
seen Looper and Brick, and I love both those films. Looper is actually one of my favorites. Yeah.
So Kevin, Rian Johnson, this is really his first movie after everything that happened with The Last Jedi. It's got a great cast in it with Daniel Craig, Chris Evans, just right off the top, and a lot of other people. Give us the scoop. Is Knives Out worth the hype I've been hearing about it?
Okay, so yeah, let's touch on this cast first of all, because this movie is really about the cast. Daniel Craig, Chris Evans, Ana de Armas, Jamie Lee Curtis, Michael Shannon, Don Johnson, Toni Collette, Christopher Plummer, Frank Oz is in it as well. So when I saw the trailer for this, let me be brutally honest here. Obviously, if you know me, I'm not a fan of The Last Jedi, and I've been tough on Rian Johnson. A lot of Star Wars fans have been tough on Rian Johnson. A lot of people call him Ruin Johnson because of The Last Jedi. I can be objective about him and his directing because, yes, his prior films I really like. And I got to say, directing this cast is really, really cool in the way that he gets them all together and to all individually shine. If you see the trailer, you get a gist of what it's about. A detective investigates the death of a patriarch of an eccentric, combative family. To me, it's kind of like an R-rated dark comedy version of Clue.
Okay. That's kind of what I got because the feel of it for, too.
Yeah. And it takes place in this beautiful house. It's shot in and around Boston. It almost kind of looked like that. Aaron and I were looking at each other going, does that kind of look like the house on Haunted Hill a little bit, too? You know, because we'd visited that house, you know, when we were traveling around in Georgia. But it takes place in Boston. And... So Christopher Plummer is the person in question that dies, and Daniel Craig plays the private investigator that's working with the police because he's anonymously hired to solve this murder mystery here. And of course, there's an inheritance involved, and everyone kind of has their own agendas. So it's kind of like Clue, but it's darker, and there's a couple little twists in it as well. And it's written really, really, really well. If you can stay awake through most of it,
it's a little slow.
And yeah, well, it's longer than it should be. It was like a little over, I forgot the runtime on it. What does it say on here? It says, okay, so it's 2 hours and 10 minutes. It should have been about 2 hours and 45 minutes. I will be honest, and Aaron, I'll tell you what Aaron and I both kind of nodded out maybe about, an hour and 20 minutes.
So
into
really,
it.
And then you say it was 2 hours and 10 minutes and it should be about 1 hour and 45.
Yeah, yeah. But once we kind of got caught up to speed, when stuff really started to roll out and the pieces were falling together and the mystery was coming together, it was clever. But it's a little too long. It's a little too slow during certain parts of it. But I will give it to Rian Johnson because the story is very clever. The cast is fantastic. This must have been a fun movie to shoot, to be honest with you. And it's nice to see these actors famous for other characters more that we're used to, especially like Chris Evans and Don Johnson, by the way. That dude is aging really well.
Oh, you should see him in Watchmen.
Yeah, exactly. It's nice to see these characters do something completely different. And I give him credit for it. But buy it, not a buy it, I would say definitely a stream.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm intrigued by this. I will say this, between what I've seen of Daniel Craig in this film and that movie he did, Logan's Lucky, Daniel Craig has got an awesome American accent.
Yeah, he definitely did the accent in this one, and he did a very good job, and he was very good.
Now, I want to talk about something you did last night, Kevin, a special to one of our all-time favorite movies around the Fandom Podcast Network, and that is Galaxy Quest. You attended a Fathom event?
Yes, it was a Fathom. I'm laughing because Fathom, sometimes stuff goes wrong.
Yeah.
And sure enough, it happened, but we rerighted the ship. I went to see a Fathom event called Never Surrender, a Galaxy Quest documentary. For those of you that don't know, Galaxy Quest, Kyle, came out 20 years ago.
I know, I feel old.
I know.
Where's my
right?
cane?
Right. It was playing only in one theater within 50-mile radius of where I live. So I had to drive without traffic, it's about a 35-40 minute drive to this theater. But traffic getting there was horrible. I was gonna try to see 21 Bridges before this one, but I couldn't do it because I got stuck in horrible traffic. But I did get there in time to see this film, and I was drawn to make sure that I saw this because I love Galaxy Quest, and it was a wonderful, wonderful documentary. But before I go into that, though, we were waiting for it to come on, and all of a sudden it just started playing without sound.
Oh, great. Thank you, Fathom.
And the woman next to me was going, yeah, this feels like a Fathom event. I've been here before. There's always something wrong that goes on with a Fathom event, you know? And so a bunch of us went and hunted down some managers and saying, first of all, you're going to turn the sound on and you're going to start this over. And that's exactly what they did. So it was a really, really great tribute. The people that did this got pretty much the whole cast there. They did a great tribute to Alan Rickman, which was nice. They got Tim Allen, Sigourney Weaver on there. And they also kind of they did this thing where they had this theater playing it, and they had several people from the movie there, and they interviewed these super fans that dressed up as the Thermians and stuff like that. It was a really, really well done documentary talking about it, and Will Wheaton was in this a lot being interviewed, and he was great. He went on about talking about how this was like the best Star Trek film, but it did it in a great way to where it didn't make fun of anyone. It was a great tribute to it. Tim Allen was interviewed as well. It was just a great, I was not disappointed. And I, you know, obviously it's only a one night only, but I do expect it to, probably hit some type of streaming or definitely come to video. And you should, if you're a fan, you should definitely talk about it. And I'll talk about it a little bit more, in the near future. by the way, Enrico, Cullen Tony, who played Mathazar, he was on it and interviewed as well. But one of my my favorite part of it is, you know, Justin Long, who plays Brandon.
Yeah.
He was the one, the nerdy kid, you know, of course we know him now from a lot of stuff. He was talking about an Alan Rickman, thing with him that was very funny. They're both going to be part of this play production. He didn't name the production, so I don't know what it was. Alan Rickman was on stage doing it, and Justin Long had a chance to, like, how they kind of overlap actors and stuff, mm-hmm. for parts. Some will come and leave, and others will take over and keep it going. He had the opportunity to be in the play with them for a short time before Alan Rickman left, but it, because of scheduling and stuff, he ended up coming in after Alan left. But Alan left him a letter, like right when he arrived, and it said "F you" spelled out, but then a wonderful, like, you know, congratulations letter on the inside of it. So that was very, very funny.
Very cool.
This is one of those, if you're a fan of it, you have to see this. It's really, really good. And the new interviews are wonderful.
That's awesome. Now, Kevin, you know anything about Street Hunter?
That's my question for you,
Kyle. I would know zero about Street Hunter. Sorry. Never saw that one.
Okay, so, you know, I'm collecting laser discs now. It's a lost media. By the way, Kyle, when I was in Burbank, we went to this all year round Halloween store, and they had this book section, and they had a book there that you bought for me for a gift. Remember all those VHS covers, mm-hmm. from the long lost movies and such? They had that book there. But I found this Laserdisc at this one of these really cool stores there in Burbank. And actually, no, this one was bought at one a little bit south of me at another place, like a vinyl shop. And I was curious because it had one of my favorite action heroes from the late 80s and early 90s. And that stars, let me ask you this, Kyle.
Okay.
And there's only one right answer. The American Ninja films. What's the best part about the American Ninja films?
I know his name. I want to say Steve James.
Yes.
Okay.
Correct answer, Kyle. The American Ninja, Michael Dudikoff's co-star in 1 and 2. And then he came back for 3, I think. Steve James. Steve James not only is a better actor than Michael Dudikoff, he actually knows martial arts. Unfortunately, he died at a young age, at like age 41. I think he had cancer.
Yeah, pancreatic cancer, that's or something nasty like that. Stuff.
But he's always played, like, the sidekick, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
he's always been like the best friend, or he's been part of like the strike force, you know, like in Delta Force. He's been in a lot of stuff. He was in Moonlighting, Avenging Force. He was in that one as well. Hollywood Shuffle, Johnny Be Good, Hero in the Terror. He was also in McBain. But he's always been kind of like the supporting guy. Well, I came across this Laserdisc called Street Hunter. And it caught my eye because it has Steve James on the cover in this really cool kind of trench coat with this kind of cool hat. It's like the trench coat's more like one of those dusters. And he's got a dog with him. He's got this cool Doberman. But behind him, overshadowing him, is the co-star, Reb Brown, who's been in Uncommon Valor and a bunch of other action films. But he plays the bad guy. But this movie, Kyle, is cool for 2 reasons. First of all, it's hard to find this movie anywhere now because you pretty much can only find it on VHS or Laserdisc, because this is one of those films that never made the jump to DVD. It got lost. I cannot find this on DVD anywhere. If it is, it's probably a bootleg copy. But the main reason why this is cool is that Kyle, he stars as the main action hero in this film. This is his film. He plays the character called Logan Blade, former police officer, now kind of like a private investigator enforcer. And he's working with a couple of the members of the police department trying to bring this up and coming drug dealer to justice, played by John Leguizamo. And it was a fun action film, but it's sad because not only did Steve James pass away, if you get a chance, you got to watch him in his films. He's fantastic. But this was his one starring role in a film. And unfortunately, the cover or the poster, he gets overshadowed by Reb Brown, who looks nothing like Reb Brown in the movie because he plays the bad guy. Whatever picture they got Reb Brown of, they cut and paste from something else he was in. But this is Steve James' film, and he has a dog. It's really cool. He helps him.
He has a dog, and he helps him. And that makes it
But special. Yeah, this I wanted to throw that out there because it's as I'm collecting my Laserdiscs, I'm finding stuff that you can't find anywhere else except on Laserdisc or VHS, and it's kind of sad. There's a lot of fun movies out there that we may not ever see make that jump into Blu-ray or digital in some places now.
Yeah, it's amazing to me how much actually made it onto Laserdisc, because it wasn't around that long.
No.
So,
I mean, it was supposed to be the next big thing where, okay, VHS is now it's going to be Laserdisc, and people, it was hot for a short while, and then boom, DVDs came in.
Yeah. I do remember the first ever thing I saw on Laserdisc was Ghostbusters.
Yes. So. Yeah. Yeah. Well, there was a lot of classics that were getting released on Laserdisc. So, yeah.
Okay. So I have a little guilty pleasure that I want to speak about real quick here. And that is the return of one of my favorite shows. And
oh, yeah.
And that is Mad About You. They had been talking for years about a Mad About You reunion. It really didn't catch on with NBC. One of the more interesting things that's been happening is the cable company Spectrum has been developing their own series, and they picked up the rights to Mad About You, and they helped produce and make this reunion season of Mad About You, and it is now available streaming on Spectrum. I watched the first episode the other day. One, I felt really old when I looked at Paul Reiser and Helen Hunt at this point. It takes place about 18 years after the series ended, and the series begins with their daughter, Mabel, heading off to college. And
did they have a daughter on the show?
At the very end of it, they did have a daughter on the show.
Okay.
And this, it kind of deals with their empty nest issues and stuff like that. But Paul Reiser and Helen Hunt still have the same chemistry. Some familiar faces are back on the show. Richard Kind is back. He was a regular on the show. Anne Ramsey, who played Helen Hunt's sister, she's back on the show. It was a fun revisit.
Did you say Kind?
Richard Kind.
Kind was,
yeah.
He was coming back?
And a couple other familiar faces are supposed to pop up here as the series goes along. John Pankow is back as well, who was Paul Reiser's cousin. But it was missing one thing, Kevin. And I could feel it. Murray the dog. Ooh.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about Phoebe's sister.
No. Murray the dog, who was a great part of that show.
Didn't he kept like running into the walls, like chasing stuff? Yeah.
But no, this was a great revisit. Am I going to say this was an outstanding episode? No, it wasn't, but it still had that spirit. Helen Hunt and Paul Reiser are magic together. So yeah, if you were a fan of this series or a fan of that kind of series back in the day, if you have Spectrum TV, it's worth a check out. I think you would really enjoy it. I would definitely stream it.
Cool.
So with that, we're going to take a little break, tell you what else is going on around the Fandom Podcast Network, and then we'll be back because it's going to be time for Mando Watch. I know Kevin's excited.
Mando.
We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to recommend these other great podcasts on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, our weekly pop culture podcast with the latest news, reviews, and other fun topics in pop culture. For you Highlander fans, we've got Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast where we cover all things Highlander. Couch Potato Theater is for you movie buffs, our podcast celebrating the cult classics and fan favorite movies we don't get off the couch for. Time Warp, a look back on our classic and nostalgic fandoms that we still celebrate today. We also have End Zone for you NFL fans, our podcast talking about all things current in the NFL and giving our best mediocre fantasy football advice. Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast with host Tom, Brandon, and Chris discussing the master of suspense, Alfred Hitchcock. And for you Star Trek Discovery and Orville fans, we have Discoville, talking about everything Discovery and the Orville. And for you hard rock music fans, we have the Hair Metal Podcast. The Hair Metal Podcast rediscovers the nostalgia of the 1980s hair metal bands. And we also have Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, where we discuss all things Doctor Who, both past and present. And our newest podcast, Lethal Mullet, our podcast celebrating action movies from the 1980s with your host, Adam P. O'Brien. You can find these great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The Fandom Podcast Network is on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play, and now on Spotify. On Facebook, you can find us at Fandom Podcast Network, on Instagram, Fandom Podcast Network, and also on Twitter at FanPod Network. You can also email us directly at FandomPodcastNetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening and supporting the Fandom Podcast Network. And remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
Well, we hope you're going to be feeling stuffed with all the great podcasts here on the Fandom Podcast Network over this Thanksgiving holiday. But you know what? Without further ado, it's time to get to the most important part of the show in Kevin's mind. We cover it heavily on What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast, but there's enough of it to go around. So without further ado, it is once again time for Mando Watch 2019. You know, so I put a little emphasis on
it. It would have been cooler if you sounded like the Mandalorian underneath that cool Beskar helmet.
Well, I could have just went like Carl Weathers. Mando! Episode 3, The Sin. I think this might have broke the internet, Kevin, because I haven't yet found anybody who disliked this episode.
I agree, yeah. I mean, for so many reasons, this thing is so good. Everything with the baby Yoda, which, by the way, there's a podcast, the Resistance podcast, that nicknamed it Tiny, standing for This Is Not Yoda.
and of course, the big thing this week has been, of course, Baby Yoda merchandise.
This is true. Yeah. And yeah, and not just that, though, but dude, Will Roe Hood was thrust into the Star Wars universe again because of his ice cream
it's a Beskar maker.
Beskar maker, yes. What did they call it? A comtome?
Yeah. I can't think of the actual wording of it.
Scott, where are you? I can't remember what it was.
Come on, Botman. But no, this episode was fantastic. I know you were marking out the minute you saw the old Wilboro Hood ice cream maker and actually giving it purpose in the Star Wars universe now. This was just an amazing episode, though. The Mandalorian culture, everything with Baby Yoda. This hit all the big notes that Mandalorian has been setting up for the first couple of episodes. And
well, he gets the Beskar after. Let's talk about this real quick. He gets the Beskar after turning in Baby Yoda, Tiny, and then he gets all armored out, and we see that awesome, thing go on inside the stronghold of the Mandalorians, and the Vizsla character challenges him, and they have those cool blades, but then he starts to grow a conscience.
Yes.
Because Baby Yoda liked to play with that little ball.
It's not a toy.
on top of the lever, and then he's getting ready to take off, and he decides not to, and he decides to go back and rescue the baby. Rescue the baby. And so I got a couple of questions I want to ask you about this, Kyle.
Okay, bring them.
All right. First of all, at the end, we're jumping to the end here. When earlier in the episode, we find out that Carl Weathers' character, Grief Karga, had also got some of the Beskar ingots, or whatever you want to call them. He shows them to him. He gets shot while you know, Karga corners the Mandalorian in his ship, but the Mandalorian pulls a fast one and shoots him. But he shoots him right where he had kept that Beskar, and it saved his life, which is a trope when people get shot. You know, you've seen in movies and TV series for a long time, there's something in them that saves them, whether it's a Bible or a lighter or whatever it is. My question to you, Kyle, is, do you think the Mandalorian shot him there on purpose to not kill him?
Okay, I have only one way I can answer this. Mando, you are the best bounty hunter in the galaxy. You're the one I can rely on. Of course you shot me where you knew it wouldn't kill me because you are that darn good, Mando. Of course he did, Kevin. Okay. Of course he shot him where the Beskar was.
Here's another question for you, okay? Do you think that the Mandalorian has a special interest in Tiny, Baby Yoda? Because we start seeing more flashbacks of the Mandalorian, where it looks like that his people are getting systematically killed and destroyed. We see an old Trade Federation battle droid doing its damage. And then at the end of that flashback, where he's put into that little hidey hole thing, we see the door open up and we see the robot or the droid. And it looks like the droid's either getting destroyed or something's about to happen to him. Do you think that he has an interest in saving the baby Yoda? Do you think Yoda himself saved him as a child?
I'm not going to go that far. I think he has interest in saving baby Yoda because basically baby Yoda is like him, a foundling. And I think there's some little kindred spirit there, and come on, it's baby Yoda, and he is just that darn cute.
So you think that there's just more of a kindred spirit of they're both kind of falling under the foundling situation?
Yeah, exactly, and I think the Mandalorian does have a little bit of conscience, and there's a Mandalorian code, and plus, it was the Empire. Come on now.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But no, Kim.
Yeah, this episode hit all the right chords, man. I mean, God, was it Star Wars?
Oh yeah, it was.
It's so good to feel like Star Wars again.
Yeah.
Man.
Come on, I don't think anybody expected the final battle that took place in this episode, seeing all those Mandalorians come out.
Yeah, but breaking the code, so to speak, because it seems like they only come out either one at a time, or you know, one or two at the most. It's, you know, and they have to go into hiding again because there was reference to the Purge, which we'll probably learn maybe more about in the Clone Wars final season that's premiering. That, you know, the Empire probably systematically, you know, fought them and probably destroyed most of them. So they're trying to rebuild their culture. A new catchphrase, "This is the way," you know, was brought to fruition with this episode. You know, and God, seeing him all dressed up in that awesome new Beskar armor, man. Boy, didn't he look good. And he didn't get his signet, but he did get some cool, what was it? Whistling birds? Yeah. Is that what they called it? Yeah. Those weapons are pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it was just so cool. And so cool to see everything. And the quote him at the end after all the battle and you see the jetpacks. I got to get me one of those.
That was great. I love that scene. No, I'm really excited. I hope that we see Gina Carano's character next.
That is the rumor. Come Friday, we will see Gina Carano.
Yes, I'm really excited about this. I can't wait. And I hope that we see IG-11 back in a different body.
It could very well be. We're almost to the halfway point of The Mandalorian. It's been glorious so far, and it's so nice to see everybody pretty much on the same page with this and the Star Wars fandom united on how amazing the show is, because it truly is. It's the best thing on TV right now.
It is. Agreed. I mean, after three episodes, gosh, it's crazy.
So, Kevin, before we get out of here with this episode of Culture Clash, I have a bone I need to pick, because...
With me or just in general?
In general. Well, not just in general. I'm going to point it directly at something we've enjoyed. And it's those great people who make the series, The Toys That Made Us.
Ah.
Do you see where I may be going with this?
Maybe.
They have a new series coming out. The Movies That Made Us.
Yes.
Or as we affectionately call it, Couch Potato Theater.
Yeah, they have a little bit higher budget and more connections than we do, Kyle. It's not like we can get members of Ghostbusters, you know, in on our podcast, you know.
What are you talking about? I thought you got Harold Ramis on the schedule. Oh, wasn't that yeah, Harold? Oh, okay. Yeah, well, you know. Well, I have the Ouija board ready.
Yeah, this series, The Movies That Made Us, obviously they're going to talk about Die Hard, Ghostbusters. What else was on that docket?
Oh, I can't remember off the top of my head, but they were all classic 80s films.
Yeah. Yeah, but definitely very similar to one of our shows on the network, Couch Potato Theater, where we talk about, you know, our cult classic and guilty pleasure films.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, Bill Simmons, I'm looking at you too with your rewatchables. Couch Potato Theater was here first. But you know what? And all kidding aside, though, too, I just want to take a minute to just tell all of our listeners how thankful we are for you during this time of giving thanks. You have made the Fandom Podcast Network what it is. Without you guys, we aren't here. Of course, I'm thankful for you, Kevin. I'm thankful for all of the great people associated with the Fandom Podcast Network. Even those new guys, Scott and Derek, even though I can't, they're just not as cute as Baby Yoda, Kevin.
No one is cuter than Baby Yoda.
Well, Adam O'Brien might argue that point, especially when he has his mullet wig on. But
I am thankful for you as well, brother, and all of our listeners and friends of the network that have come on our shows and you know, guested and or been, you know, leading the charge with the shows on this network. We really appreciate everyone that has contributed. And, you know, listeners, we'd love to hear more from you guys. Let us know what you like and don't like, and contact us, please.
That doesn't give you right to email us all the time, though, Jennifer Walk. I'm just saying.
No, I want her to keep emails. At least someone is. So, yes, please keep
are
doing
you sure,
it,
especially after it. This week of fantasy football? Yeah, exactly. Well, with that,
happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
Hope you have a good one.
Happy Thanksgiving. And as always, enjoy your fandom. And I swear by God, I thought turkeys could fly.